The search began in silence. Two women known by everyone in Moab, Keelan Schult and Crystal Turner, had not shown up for work, and their campsite high in the La Salle Mountains sat eerily still. Friends drove the gravel roads calling their names, headlights cutting through pine and dust. On the third day, a friend found what police would later confirm as a double homicide scene. The murders of Keelan and Crystal in August 2021 shocked a community built on trust and open skies. They had married only months earlier, known for their kindness and love of the outdoors. Yet in one of the most photographed landscapes in America, they were suddenly gone. This is the story of two lives, the questions that followed, and the investigation that tried to make sense of what happened in the quiet between the canyon walls. Chapter 1, The Vanish Point. The morning light over Moab came soft and red, painting the sandstone cliffs in color that looked almost alive. It was mid-August 2021, and the desert was still holding its heat even after sunrise. In the small town below, people moved through their routines, coffee, gas, work, not knowing two familiar faces had already vanished into the hills above them. Keelan Schult and Crystal Turner had been married only a few months. They lived simply, working shifts at local businesses, parking their van at quiet campsites in the La Salle Mountains to escape the heat. They knew these roads better than most visitors. That week, they set up camp near a creek, surrounded by tall trees and the smell of rain that sometimes swept in from the ridge. When Keelan didn't show up for work at the Moonflower Co-op, her friends noticed. She was never late. By the next day, messages went unanswered. One of her closest friends, Cindy Sue, grew uneasy. She called Crystal's phone. No answer. Another day passed. A few people said they might have seen the couple driving earlier in the week, but no one was sure. In a town as small as Moab, word traveled fast, and by the weekend, it was all anyone talked about. On August 19th, the first call to law enforcement came in. Two women missing. They had been camping in the mountains east of town. The Grand County Sheriff's Office dispatched a patrol unit to check common sites where locals stayed. The terrain was tricky, miles of winding dirt roads, dense woods in some parts, and poor signal. As the sun dropped behind the ridge, search efforts grew tense. Friends formed their own groups. They knew where Keelan and Crystal liked to park their van, usually near water, away from crowds. The couple often texted coordinates to friends when they moved camps, but this time there was nothing. One of those friends, a man named Sean Paul, took his vehicle up the mountain. He drove for hours through switchbacks and forest. Late that evening, he found their car near the South Mesa area. The doors were locked. The tent still stood, flaps down, a lantern visible inside. What happened next would stay with him forever. He walked a short distance beyond the campsite, calling their names. The air smelled faintly of rain and smoke. Then he saw something that made him stop cold. In a small clearing, under the trees, lay the body of one of the women. He backed away, shaking, grabbed his phone, and called 911. When deputies arrived, they secured the scene and pushed everyone back. A second body was found nearby. Both had gunshot wounds. The quiet mountain became an active investigation site overnight. Word spread fast across Moab. The next morning, the sheriff's office confirmed the discovery but released few details. People gathered outside the co-op, leaving flowers and candles. Some held each other in disbelief. These were women everyone knew, helpful, warm, always smiling. They had been married that spring, celebrating their new life with the same joy they carried everywhere they went. Detectives from multiple agencies joined the case. They documented the area, collected shell casings, and began mapping where each piece of evidence lay. The tent, their vehicle, spent rounds, and personal items were all marked for analysis. The campsite was not isolated. A few others had been nearby earlier that week. Investigators began compiling a list of everyone who had stayed in the area. By the end of the first week, the timeline started to form. Witnesses last saw Keelan and Crystal alive on August 13th at Woody's Tavern in town. They had mentioned to friends that a creepy guy was camping close by and that they might move to another spot. That detail became the first real clue, and the phrase would echo in headlines for months. The La Salle Mountains stretched wide and wild. Locals loved their solitude, tourists loved their beauty. But the same remoteness that offered peace now seemed to hide answers. Detectives searched for shell casings, footprints, tire tracks, anything that could point to a suspect. The small town atmosphere shifted overnight. People who used to camp freely now checked their locks twice. Parents warned their kids not to hike alone. The The outdoor freedom that defined Moab suddenly felt fragile. At the funeral service later that month, hundreds gathered. Photographs of the two women lined the church walls, smiling faces, arms around each other, their dog beside them. The grief was quiet but heavy. In the background, investigators continued to sift through phone records, witness statements, and tips. Nothing solid yet. The creepy guy mentioned hung over every interview. Who was he? Did anyone see his vehicle? Was it someone local, or just a traveler passing through? Weeks later, law enforcement released more information about the timeline, but still no arrests. They confirmed the deaths were homicides by gunfire. Autopsies supported what was clear from the scene. But motive and suspect remained open questions. The canyon walls around Moab had seen centuries of silence, but this silence felt different. It carried fear and confusion. For friends and family, the pain was made worse by not knowing why. In the months that followed, a few leads surfaced, sightings of unfamiliar campers, vehicle descriptions that didn't match anyone local. Investigators followed each one, often ending at a dead end. As summer turned to fall, the memory of Keelan and Crystal stayed visible in town, murals, memorial rides, candlelight vigils. But the question of who killed them, and why, lingered without answer. By the end of that year, the case had grown colder but not forgotten. Detectives continued to cross-check evidence against other incidents in the region. Each step forward met another wall. For the people of Moab, life went on, but trust in the wild space around them had changed. The La Salles, once a place of retreat, now carried a shadow. The search for answers was only beginning. Chapter 2, The Lives They Led. Keelan Schult had grown up around Moab. She knew every curve of the canyon roads, every trail that tourists only glimpsed once before moving on. Her father ran a wood-carving shop near town, and she often helped him when she was younger. She was known for her warmth, a free spirit who lived close to the earth. Friends said she carried peace wherever she went, a kind of calm that made people stop and talk longer than they planned. Crystal Turner came from Arkansas. She was older than Keelan, steady and kind, with a quick sense of humor. The two met in Moab, where both worked seasonal jobs, and found an easy rhythm together. They shared a love for camping, for open spaces where no one told them how to live. They were married in April 2021, surrounded by friends, flowers, and desert air. By August, they had settled into a quiet life. Keelan worked at the Moonflower Co-op, a small organic grocery known for its sense of community. Crystal had a job at McDonald's in town. They lived part of the time in a van, sometimes renting small spots nearby. It wasn't a life of comfort, but it was theirs, simple, honest, peaceful. People in Moab remembered seeing them often, laughing, moving between shifts, their dog Ruth, usually in tow. To friends, they were gentle and unshakably kind. That made what happened even harder to process. After their deaths, investigators turned to those friends for help filling in the gaps. What had they said in the days before the murders? Who was the creepy guy they mentioned? One friend recalled that Keelan had been uneasy. She'd said there was someone camping close to them, a man who made them uncomfortable. She didn't know his name. Another friend remembered that Keelan had planned to move the campsite if things didn't feel right. But after that, contact stopped. Detectives gathered hours of interviews, cell phone logs, and security footage from nearby towns. Every lead was run through databases. Still no match. Forensic teams analyzed shell casings and DNA recovered from the scene. The results were slow to come. During that time, Keelan's father, Sean Paul, stayed deeply involved. He gave interviews, pressed for updates, and organized search groups even after the initial investigation slowed. He called local radio shows, describing his daughter's light and energy, her kindness to strangers. He said she believed people were good, even when they weren't. In the co-op where Keelan had worked, her friends kept her memory alive. They painted a mural near the store, two bright faces, surrounded by desert flowers. Customers stopped to look, some crying quietly. It wasn't just grief, it was disbelief. Moab was used to tragedy in other forms, climbing accidents, lost hikers, sudden flash floods. But this felt different. Two women murdered for no reason. The story traveled fast, reaching national news. Commentators talked about safety for campers, about women traveling alone, about violence in rural spaces that often went unnoticed. Police continued to hold briefings, but gave little away. They said multiple agencies were now involved, including state and federal resources. Investigators were still working the evidence, and the public's patience was wearing thin. Rumors began to spread online. Some linked the case to nearby disappearances. Others speculated about connections to other crimes in the region. Detectives urged caution, reminding everyone that the investigation was ongoing. For families, the noise made things worse. By early 2022, almost 6 months later, the trail had gone quiet. Official updates became less frequent. But locals continued to share theories and sightings. Some swore they saw an unfamiliar vehicle that week, an older model pickup, gray or silver, parked near the mountain trails. Others said they saw someone wandering near campsites late at night. None of it led to a name. Then a new threat emerged. Another man, living in a van, had been questioned early in the case but not charged. He later left Utah and was reported missing elsewhere. Months later, he would be found dead by suicide. Investigators later confirmed he had been considered a person of interest, though no charges were ever filed. That detail only deepened the questions. Friends of the couple struggled with the lack of closure. In interviews, they described a growing sense of unease about camping alone. They began checking in on each other more often. What had once been normal, parking by a creek and watching the stars, now came with fear. In Moab's outdoor community, guides and outfitters started informal safety briefings for visitors. Flyers appeared at campgrounds reminding travelers to share their location with someone before heading out. Law enforcement added patrols along the mountain roads during peak season. For those who knew Keelan and Crystal personally, the changes came too late. The trauma had already altered the rhythm of their lives. One friend, who had joined the first search, said she still couldn't drive up the mountain without hearing the echo of that day. The smell of rain, the silence after calling their names. The investigation kept grinding on behind the scenes. Digital analysts examined phone pings from nearby towers. Forensic teams cross-referenced bullet calibers with other open cases in the region. Every few months, the sheriff's office would issue a short update. The case remained open and active. Meanwhile, Keelan's father continued to speak publicly. He wanted to make sure his daughter and Crystal were never forgotten. He started a foundation in their memory to support victims of violent crime and missing persons searches. It was his way of fighting the feeling of helplessness that often followed tragedy. By spring 2022, nearly a year after the murders, Moab had changed. More visitors came than ever, drawn by the desert's beauty. But locals carried an invisible weight. The case had revealed something fragile, the illusion that safety and openness could always coexist in wild places. The outdoor community, which had long prided itself on freedom and trust, began to talk differently. Some saw the couple's deaths as a warning about vulnerability, about the need to stay alert even in nature. Others said it was proof that violence could happen anywhere, even in paradise. Through it all, Keelan and Crystal's story remained central. News outlets revisited the case, podcasts examined the timeline, and online forums discussed theories in endless threads. But each retelling came back to the same truth. Two lives, taken without clear reason, in a place they loved. The FBI eventually confirmed that the man found dead months later, a former suspect in a separate case, had been connected to the murders through ballistics and digital evidence. It was a grim resolution, one that came without trial or explanation. Yet even with that, questions remained. Why had it happened? Was there something missed earlier? Could it have been prevented? For their families, no answer felt complete. As spring turned to summer again, the desert bloomed. Wildflowers pushed through red dirt near the co-op mural. Locals began another season of work, guiding tourists and stocking shelves. But for those who had known Keelan and Crystal, nothing looked quite the same. In the quiet moments between shifts, they still felt the weight of it. The sound of a phone that never rang, the last text message never answered, the unspoken wish for one more chance to say goodbye. The investigation had delivered names and facts, but not peace. And in the canyons around Moab, the silence still felt like it was waiting for something more. Chapter 3, Breaks and Echoes. Spring returned to the La Salle Mountains with snowmelt running through the creeks and campers once again setting up beneath the pines. Nearly a year had passed since Keelan Schult and Crystal Turner were found. Their names had become part of local memory, mentioned in town meetings, whispered at trailheads, printed on bracelets and stickers. The question still hung in the air, but the quiet persistence of life in Moab went on. Detectives had never stopped working the case. Behind the scenes, teams from state and federal agencies had pooled their resources, rechecking evidence. The break came slowly through forensic work, small pieces of data that, when aligned, formed a picture no one could ignore. Ballistics testing tied the gun used in the murders to another case in the same region. The weapon matched one owned by a man named Adam Pinkasiewicz, a local mechanic who had once worked with Crystal. Pinkasiewicz had left Utah shortly after the killings. Months later, he was found dead in another state. His death was ruled a suicide. When investigators retraced his movements, they confirmed he had told someone privately that he killed two women in Moab. That confession, combined with physical evidence, finally brought the case to a close. The confirmation didn't feel like closure, not really. There was relief that the threat was gone, but no chance for answers. No trial, no confession under oath, no way to understand what pushed him to do it. The town wanted justice, but what it got was only certainty, and even that came late. Keelan's father, Sean Paul, spoke to the press after the announcement. His voice was calm but tired. He thanked investigators, thanked the community, and said he hoped his daughter and Crystal could finally rest. But he also reminded everyone that behind the headlines were two people who had loved deeply and lived freely. They weren't just a case, he said. They were light. In the months that followed, Moab began to heal in small, uneven ways. Memorial rides were held through the canyon roads. The co-op where Keelan had worked placed a photo of the couple near the entrance, beside a note that read, "Be kind. Be safe. Be remembered." The mural downtown faded slightly in the summer sun, but still drew people to stop and look. The case also left a lasting imprint on how the community thought about safety in the outdoors. The sheriff's office began new outreach programs, encouraging campers to share their plans, report unusual encounters, and check in regularly. Local guides held workshops on awareness and self-defense. What had once been an easy trust and solitude now came with quiet caution. For the families, healing came differently. Some days were filled with gratitude for the people who kept their memory alive. Other days brought back the anger of everything unanswered. They learned to live inside both truths. At the first anniversary gathering, held near the trail where the women were found, dozens of people hiked together in silence. The air smelled of pine and dirt, and a few small flowers had begun to bloom. A friend of the couple placed two white stones beside the creek and said softly, "We're still here." For many, that hike marked a shift. The investigation had ended, but the meaning of what happened was still unfolding. The tragedy had forced the town to confront the thin line between wilderness and safety, between freedom and risk. Moab had always drawn people who wanted to live differently. Artists, travelers, seekers, and Keelan and Crystal had been part of that spirit. Their deaths reminded everyone how fragile it all could be. National attention had moved on, as it always does. True crime shows had covered the case, podcasts had dissected the timeline, and headlines had faded. But for the people who lived there, the story remained part of daily life, a caution, a memory, a shared loss. Detectives eventually closed the file, marking it solved. They held a small press briefing that summer, confirming the findings and releasing a statement of sympathy. One investigator, speaking off camera, said the case would stay with him forever. "You don't forget something like that," he said. "You just learn to carry it." Back in town, the co-op reopened its garden area, where friends planted lavender and sage in the couple's memory. Tourists often walked past without realizing what it meant, but locals knew. When the wind moved through the plants, it carried the faint scent of the mountains. Over time, the fear that had shadowed the town began to soften. People camped again, laughed again, watched the stars without as much worry. But they also carried new habits, texting coordinates, checking weather, telling someone when they'd be back. In that balance between freedom and care, Moab found a new kind of awareness. The place had not lost its beauty, it had just learned its cost. For Keelan and Crystal's families, every anniversary brought both ache and peace. They spoke about them in the present tense, as if still just up the mountain, setting up a tent, sharing coffee by the fire. Their story became part of the land itself, a reminder that even in vast, open spaces, every life leaves a trace. On a quiet evening 2 years after their deaths, a small group gathered again near the same trail. They lit candles, said prayers, and read a line that had become their symbol. "Love lives here." The canyon took the light, and the sound faded into the dark. The mountain stood still. The wind moved softly through the trees, carrying what words could not. And somewhere between grief and remembrance, the story of Keelan Schultz and Crystal Turner settled, not as an ending, but as an echo that would never entirely fade.